Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
And nice enough to join us for the first time on our 95.7 airwaves, President of Baseball Operations for the San Francisco Giants, Farhan Zaidi. Farhan, listen, we very, very much appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us. Obviously, you have many better things to do, sir. First thing I wanted to ask you about is the keen ability that you have demonstrated in being able to identify players from other organizations and then watch their careers flourish, like Chris Taylor, Max Muncy, and here, of course, Mike Yastrzemski, Donovan Solano. They leap to mind, and there are more than that. How do you do that, Farhan, and how important is that to the plan for this year and going forward for the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be on with you guys. But, you know, when you look at some of those players, I think what it demonstrates is there's really a pretty thin line between guys that have really productive minor league careers and guys that make the jump to the big league level and wind up going on to successful big league careers. And, you know, so much of it is what guys do right when they come up. I mean, do they have success right away? Do they struggle? And then maybe they get sent down and don't get another opportunity. So, you know, for guys like that, I think as much as anything, it's important to have a clubhouse, a coaching staff, and a manager who will be supportive of young guys and keep running them out there and giving them opportunities, even if they aren't proven. So, you know, guys like Solano and Yaz had been really good players in the minor leagues, and Boach and the staff last year did a great job of giving those guys opportunities, and it's been great to see them build on it this year. But, you know, I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, there's only so many spots in the big leagues, and, you know, sometimes, you know, there are players that you know, can make that jump. It's just about giving them the opportunity.
Do you want to do the Joey Bart stuff now or wait till the end?
Well, I'm always ready for it, so it's totally up to you, Ray.
Well, I'll just get rid of it so I don't have to confront it later. What exactly is he doing down at Sacramento, and what is he showing you down there that sort of convinces you that now is not the time yet to bring him up, that you need to see more from him down in Sacramento, which I admit is not optimal circumstances, but it's the best you've got.
Right. Right.
Fill that picture out for us.
Yeah. I mean, we went into spring training this year, and I mean a spring training like the actual spring training, not whatever happened over the last month. But, you know, thinking this is a guy who we're very high on as an organization, but who has had less than 100 at-bats above A ball, you know, nothing, you know, to do with his, you know, not his own fault. A lot of it was a couple of unfortunate injuries he had last year, but we felt very strongly that he's a guy who needed more minor league reps. I mean, the ability to handle major league pitching on a day in, day out basis is a huge challenge. And a lot of guys get rushed and struggled and they never get over that hump. So, for somebody like him, who's so important to the future of this organization, we want to make sure that we push the button at the right time. And for us collectively, you know, less than 100 at-bats above A-ball, I mean, there are very few cases of guys that make that jump and just come up to the big leagues and hit the ground running. So to your point, you know, there isn't a minor league season right now, but we feel really good about the setup we have in Sacramento. If you look at the pitchers that we have there, they're all basically major league depth. We have some quality depth in the organization, and he's getting to face those pitchers on a day-in, day-out basis. And frankly, however people want to describe the alternate sites that we have, you know, Joey Bart until now has never even faced that kind of AAA major league quality pitching on a day in day out basis. So we're watching his at bats very carefully. As has been reported, he's working out at first base as well. And that additional bit of defensive versatility is going to help us get him in the lineup as well. So those are all kind of continuing parts of his development, and we're continuing to evaluate it. We haven't, set timelines, either saying we can't do it until X date or we have to do it by a certain date. We're just continuing to evaluate it, and the reports out of there have been really good so far on what he's done.
What about the decision might have been impacted had Buster Posey not opted out? Were there things that he could have learned in a major league dugout, even if it didn't mean you wanted to expose him to a lot of major league pitching?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could go both ways. On the one hand, you know, that kind of apprenticeship, you know, being with Buster on the team would have a lot of value. But, you know, on the flip side, when Buster did opt out, it created even more opportunity at the catching position. So, you know, I'd say it didn't really impact the decision one way or another. And again, this is driven less by short-term need and more by what's best for the organization overall. And obviously Buster is going to be back next year, so that's a dynamic we can deal with then. You know, the other thing is we've got a couple catchers on the team, Tyler Heidman and Chadwick Tromp, who were really good in AAA last year, have done a nice job swinging the bat for us this year. So I don't want to act like they're not part of this conversation. They've done a nice job for us and worked their way into the picture in terms of our catching depth going forward.
So that brings me, I guess, to another of the questions we have to ask you, which is about the defensive performance, not just of the two guys you just mentioned, although they've both been involved in some of the early mistakes. But in general, this has seemed to be a mistake-prone defensive team. And I guess the first part of my question would be, what do you attribute that to, and what are the ways you go about fixing it? And secondly, do you give any thought to, although clearly a lot of defensive shifting is an organizational philosophy, do you give thought to holding off on some of it until guys seem more comfortable fielding their position under a normal circumstance?
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, you know, shifting has become, you know, really has really proliferated the game in a way that I don't think people necessarily realize, because you don't always see defensive positioning. But, you know, the defensive players on every team are kind of moving around on every play. And it is one of those things where when it works out and, you know, you see a left-handed hitter hit what seems like a shot into right field and you've got a guy playing short right and he throws him out at first base, I don't think anybody necessarily gives the, you know, the appropriate credit to the shift. But, you know, when guys are maybe lose their footing or you don't turn a double play because of the shift, you know, that becomes more glaring. But every team, including us, has sort of, you know, weighed the pros and cons. And with every shift that you do, there is going to be a cost and benefit. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. But we're just confident that over the long run, we save more outs than we lose by doing it. In terms of the overall defensive performance, I think one thing that has surprised us a little bit is, you know, we're not, you know, the fastest team. I don't expect, and I think collectively we don't expect us to have a ton of range and make a lot of spectacular plays. But we have players who are generally really sound defensively. And so some of the more basic errors that we've made, I think, have been very uncharacteristic of the players we have and the careers they've had. So I think that's just something that's going to be cleaned up over time. It's certainly frustrating because it's probably cost us a game or two, and you know, you don't get games back and a shortened season, it hurts a little more. But you know, these are fundamentally sound players, and we don't expect those mistakes to continue.
Farhan Zaidi, nice enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. And believe it or not, Farhan, occasionally people will call us and they will text us with comments about your manager, which, you know, happens in baseball, right? But seriously, Gabe Kapler, you know, in Philly, made some regrettable moves, had a pitching change mistake he made last week. And so people are really scrutinizing your manager right now. Can you explain to Giants fans and us, in your estimation, what makes Gabe Kapler the right man to manage the Giants right now?
Yeah, he has a challenging job right now because, as we've alluded to a little bit, this is a lineup, a roster, a pitching staff that sort of needs to be managed pretty actively. And we don't have, five workhorses in the rotation who are going to throw seven innings where, you know, you just hand the ball to your setup man and your closer. He's obviously having to mix and match a lot on the pitching side, on the position player side. We're trying to use the entire roster. We're platooning some. That means pinch hitting some. And when you're a manager and you have to make that many moves, as many moves as our roster kind of behooves right now, every time you make a move, you bring a pinch hitter off the bench. The best pinch hitter in the world is a 350 hitter and is going to make an out more often than he's going to get a hit. So, you're making a lot of 55, 45, 60, 40 bets that get scrutinized. And if they don't work out, it's the onus kind of falls on you. So he's got to make a lot of acts of commission right now in managing our team. And as a result, I think he gets, kind of the burden of those acts of commission in terms of the scrutiny that they create. But again, I look at some of our best wins this season, and they've come from a lot of the decisions that he's made. So, we think this is the way to manage our roster that gives us the best chance to be competitive and win games. And I appreciate that he's willing to pull the trigger and be aggressive with a lot of these moves. So, what happened with going out to try to get Tyler Rogers in that extra inning game last week, I think he owned up to it. It was just a mental screw up. He's been around the game for a long time, had a long career. And he just owned it. There was, it was a tough inning. There was a lot of things going on. I'm sure there was a lot of stuff going on in the dugout. And I just wrote that off as kind of a mental screw up, which he owned up to, and we turned the page.
Farhan, what would you like to see your skipper do better going forward?
I think it's just a matter of him getting comfortable, getting comfortable with kind of the rhythm of, being the manager of the Giants, understanding the media. I think he's got great relationships with the players and, frankly, with people throughout the organization, on the business side of the organization and throughout baseball operations. He's a great connector. So to me, it's just about him continuing to get comfortable. And, even though you guys have people calling in on some of his moves, like every major league manager gets on the radio, there's a lot of support for him from our fan base as well, which I think is made him more comfortable and given him more confidence. So I'm just looking forward to seeing him continue to grow in the role.
Let me ask a macro question now. And I know general managers hate the word rebuild to the point where they put teeth marks in their coffee tables when they hear the word. It seems pretty clear that this is a rebuild. And given that the parameters of the word, how far along are you in that rebuild? Are you still at sort of a teardown stage? Are you transitioning to a rebuild? Where are you, in terms of what the end goal of what you want the organization to look like is? Where are you, even if you have to put a percentage on it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think about it in terms of the waves of players that we have coming through the farm system. Obviously, Bart, who you were kind enough to ask about very early on this call.
we'll double back on him. Don't worry about that.
He's really close. Ramos is really close. We've gotten to see him somewhere. We're excited about him. And then we've got a wave of players that's, a little behind those guys that, may not hit the big leagues next year that might be looking at 2022 on them. I mean, those timelines can move around, but, we have a wave of talent that we think is probably a year and a half away, including some of the guys that we drafted and acquired over the last year. So, in our position in this market with the expectations of the fans, and appropriately so, given the history of this organization, we're going to go out and try to put together a competitive team every year. Kevin Gausman, Drew Smyly, some of the pitchers that we acquired, bringing Hunter Pence back, and he's got a very specific role on the team and has been a great leader. As we kind of wait for those waves of talent to arrive, we're going to continue to try to supplement the major league roster and put a competitive product out there. So Look, anytime that you're dealing with an organization like the San Francisco Giants that has the history it has, that has the expectations from the fans that it has, you know, nobody's going to use that, the R word. It's about, you know, trying to get some long-term talent into the picture, but continuing to compete in the interim.
Well, I use the R word and I'll use it again. Everybody brings up, when they're talking about your young players, they bring up the position players. There's a lot less said about the pitchers in the pipeline. Are they further away than the position players, or do you have guys that you are looking at for 2021 to make not just an impact, but find a full-time place?
Yeah, it's interesting. I you know, when you look at position players versus pitchers coming through the farm system, you know, with position players, you know, in my view, and I think in the organization's view, it's got to be more of a steady climb. I mean, guys have to, you know, get in, you know, a couple hundred at bats, at least a half season at every level to show proficiency before you kind of continue to move them up. Pitchers can move a lot faster. I mean, you know, you have a guy who, you know, is an A ball and makes three starts and throws 18 shutout innings and strikes out 25 guys. And you say, okay, this guy's too good for this level. It's a little bit easier for pitchers, I think, to demonstrate dominance in smaller samples than it is for position players. So pitchers have the ability to move more quickly. And, you know, that certainly factors into our thinking as well. I mean, we've got some guys like Sean Jelly, Tristan Beck, who we acquired last year, Seth Corey, who are guys who could be in our rotation in the very near future. I wouldn't even rule out 2021. So there's certainly guys in the pipeline. And, you know, again, with pitchers, you know, you've got injuries, you've got attrition, and you just have more pop-up guys. So there's a little bit more volatility on that side. But we definitely have some guys we're excited about who could make an impact for us next year.
We're obviously all living in weird times right now, Farhan. And I'm wondering, as general manager or president, rather, of the Giants, A, how has just your day-to-day changed with the odd circumstances that we're under? And also, what do you feel like you have to do differently as an evaluator to understand what you're seeing from guys under weird circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, it's... you know, not being in the office is obviously different. It's something that everybody's dealing with. It's a lot of Zoom calls and a lot of texting. And so, you know, you don't get to have those organic discussions with your staff about player evaluations, you know, trade ideas, you know, what players seem to be coming on in other organizations. So it's a little bit harder to bring everybody together and have a collective picture there. It is interesting on the front of having conversations with other front offices. I know, you know, as we were going through training camp, you know, people were making phone calls almost apologetically, like, "Hey, I don't know when we're allowed to start talking about our needs and surpluses and potential deals that may happen." And obviously, everybody's really sensitive to the environment that we're in, not just in baseball and in sports, but in the world as a whole. But those conversations have kind of accelerated over the last week or two. There's been, you know, more connecting with other front offices. There's been, you know, more transactions happening. And I think this is kind of building towards, you know, a pretty traditional trade deadline in a few weeks, which I wouldn't have said a couple weeks ago. But obviously a lot of that's going to have to depend on, you know, the industry as a whole continuing the positive momentum for the last few days after, you know, a couple teams, you know, had pretty bad outbreaks, but things are looking better, and hopefully that helps us get through the season successfully.
Farhan Zaidi with us on 95.7 The Game. And Farhan, you guys, obviously the club's on the road right now, but what's going on with your home ballpark? Pardon me, is it turned into a home run haven? What is going on specifically in right field? Do the analytics support what the eye test tells us, which is there's a jet stream, or the ball's jumping out to right field like it never did before?
Yeah, and, you know, it goes back to, you know, our home and home against the A's, you know, right before the regular season started. Think about that ball that Chad Pinder hit that looked like a routine fly ball that just kind of kept carrying and carrying, wound up going for a triple. And, you know, we've continued to see that. So I know people have talked about, you know, the fact that, you know, the ventilation has changed, you know, with you know, the air not kind of coming through the gates. And that seems to have really increased the flight of the ball out that way. You know, left field, the ball is carrying well. What surprised me a little bit is in center field where, you know, the fence was moved in, you know, anywhere from 5 to 8 feet with the bullpens out there. We haven't really seen a lot more home runs out to that part of the park. So I don't know whether, you know, some of the changes in the ballpark dynamic have, you know, been counteracted by, you know, wind patterns that are holding balls up more to that part of the park. But I expected that we'd see more home runs to straightaway center and maybe some balls that we expected to be caught that just kept carrying and going over the fence. But we haven't really seen that. So we're still figuring this all out. And, you know, we talked about, you know, put the bullpens out there, and part of the fun of it is going to be figuring out how the park is going to play differently. And I don't really have the answer to that right now. It's been fun and interesting to see, and we'll just continue to play it out and, you know, have more answers soon.
How have you been chastened some by the news, not just about what happened in Miami, but what's happened with the Cardinals? Are you less sure that you guys are going to get 60 games in than you were a couple of weeks ago? Are you more sure? How's your opinion on that changed?
Yeah, you know, I saw some of the comments from the Cardinals manager where, you know, he kind of said nobody did anything, you know, egregious. And, you know, we just think somebody maybe carried the virus in from home and, you know, into the clubhouse, and it sort of spread from there. And, you know, there's a lot of attention being paid on, you know, the players have to follow the protocols. But, you know, I think in fairness, even if everybody does everything right, you know, there's a certain unpredictability and, you know, a factor of you just can't know when somebody is going to get infected, you know, in some way that they don't even realize. Like, not you know, every infection is happening at some big party that somebody's had the night before. So there's obviously a lot of people getting infected just over the course of day-to-day life. And to that point, I mean, you know, there's certainly a risk every day people go into the ballpark. But frankly, even when we weren't playing and people were at home, people were getting infected. We had people on our, you know, in our organization staff who were infected. We had players who just got infected at home. So I don't think it's fair to say the counterfactual to not playing baseball is everybody would be safe and nobody would get infected. So as far as, you know, do we play 60? Does everybody play 60? I mean, it's hard to imagine that we're not going to have another positive the rest of the season. But the testing has gotten a lot better. I think everybody's being increasingly careful as this goes on. So, you know, I still, and I think the, you know, collectively feel good about our chances of getting through the season, playing the playoffs. There may be some cancellations here and there along the way, but I think we can handle that.
You've had a couple guys express frustration in various ways early in the season. I think Gausman about whether or not he'd start, and Johnny Cueto talking about the shifts behind him. And not that either of them were speaking out of turn, but I imagine you want to defend those decisions to them, or somebody does. What do those conversations look like? If Johnny Cueto isn't sure about the shift, does someone talk to him about why those decisions are being made?
Yeah, look, we're, as we talked about, we are actively managing, you know, the roster. We're being very active with strategy. That opens yourself up to, you know, people wondering, why did we do that? You know, if you don't make any decision, it's a lot easier for everybody to assume, well, what happened, happened. But anytime you make an intervention, even if you think it's something that helps your chances, improve your chances of winning the game, you know, I mean, even the best interventions are maybe 70-30, and there's a 30% chance that it doesn't work out, and then people are going to want answers. So internally within our clubhouse with our players, you know, and I know Gabe feels this way, you know, the internal conversations and debates are very much supported. And, you know, with our pitchers, we want them to understand exactly how we're going to play every one of the opposing hitters, and we want them to be comfortable with it. So, you know, that holds true for Johnny. It holds true for everybody on the pitching staff. You know, we don't make a defensive shift without, you know, approaching the pitcher and saying, hey, this is how we're planning to play these players. So look, at the end of the day, when you're used to having a shortstop in a certain spot and a ball gets hit there and the shortstop isn't there, it's going to be frustrating. But again, like we talked about earlier, we're just confident over the long haul, this is actually going to help us. It's going to save outs and it's going to prevent runs. And, you know, I think ultimately, you know, Johnny and the rest of our pitchers understand that. And, you know, as for Gausman, you know, guys who have started in their careers want to start. You know, I think we've only used the opener maybe one time this season so far. So it's probably getting more attention than it really should be right now. But again, that's a strategy we want to continue to have on the table. And it's all about, you know, giving our team the best chance to win games. We've got pitchers who have been starters, who have been relievers, who have been long relievers. And especially with the expanded roster, I think it's, you know, important for us to be matching up and creating the best sequences, you know, that give us the best chance to win these games.
Just one more, Farhan, and we'll let you go. And again, we appreciate your time very much. Any of us who've ever played baseball, collected baseball cards, read baseball prospectus, played Strat-O-Matic, I mean, we're all fascinated by your job. Is the job as cool as we all think it is? And if I may, what's the best advice anyone in baseball ever gave you about the business?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the job, it really is as cool as you would think.
Nice.
I would like to say otherwise to try to downplay it. I think, you know, some of the, you know, little inconveniences or even difficulties that we deal with in the grand scheme of things, I think we're all really lucky to be doing what we're doing. I joke a lot that, you know, the best job I've ever had in baseball was when I was working with the A's, because, you know, I basically kind of just got to spend my time evaluating players, you know, going and watching amateurs play. You know, I had basically no management responsibilities. Poor Billy Beane and David Forst actually had to run the organization. I just kind of got to hang out on my computer, watch videos, go watch games. And that was really the fantasy baseball job. So the jobs since then haven't been, you know, quite you know, have unfortunately required a little more responsibility. But yeah, I mean, I think just having a passion for the game, you know, and continuing to grind it out. But, you know, I think everybody in this position feels very fortunate to be in it.
Farhan Zaidi, thank you very much for your time, sir. We appreciate it. Enjoy the game today. We hope to talk to you again very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, there it is, Farhan. So that's why Bart hasn't stopped at Oracle Park yet. You buying that? That's next. Damon Radwinkowski, Whitey in for Damon, 95.7 The Game.
It's the Warriors Remix. Brought to you by Video Only.
In 2015, the Warriors drew a first-round NBA playoffs matchup with the Pelicans.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.